call this meeting to order. We don't have a quorum yet, but we'll note that when we get it. And first up, we have a presentation of the Metro Business Plan for St. Paul and Mayor Chris Coleman. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I'm also pleased to be joined with Doug Baker, the CEO of Ecolab, one of our great downtown St. Paul companies. And now that Travelers has officially relocated their corporate headquarters, unfortunately, our last standing Fortune 5 in downtown St. Paul. But we save the best for last, right?
I promise. We're here.
We're here. Okay. We're here. They're going to stay. We're good to go. We have a little bit of a presentation. We thought the committee and the members of the committee would be interested in just having an opportunity to hear of some of the efforts around regional economic development that have been going on under the guise of the Itasca Group, under the Regional Council of Mayors, the City of St. Paul. We've had some assistance from some national funders that have helped us to put together the Metropolitan Business Plan, which is the entrepreneurial accelerator. And some great efforts. I think the strength of our efforts is that it's really a multifaceted approach. It is the business community. It is local units of government. The cities, the counties are all pitching in to be a part of this. And it's a way for us to build off the strengths that we have, recognize some of the challenges that we have as we try to attract and retain and grow businesses in the community, but also to really focus in laser-like in a way that our community hasn't in the past. We do have some great strengths in our region, and I don't know, we have a bit of a PowerPoint presentation to follow along. We have a tag team approach to this thing that we haven't officially tried yet, so if we fall on our face, we do have a net.
I'm glad we're first.
Well, Doug's been doing this around. He's spoken to a lot of groups on this, and we've all kind of individually had pieces of it. But
we do have a quorum now, members, so we're officially called to order.
Looks like we're coming up. You do have this. I understand you have a copy of this in front of you, so. A lot of this work started off the Itasca Group's regional scorecard that looked, it was kind of a stoplight approach to looking at what are the things that we had going for us that were particularly strong, what are some of the challenges that we faced, what were the, where were the areas that we were lacking. And so as we approached what we could do, there were certain things that we thought we could immediately impact. And some of the things that were a little bit longer-term approach to ultimately making our region as strong as it could be in terms of job creation and growth. Yep. So on slide, I think it's officially slide 2, if you don't count the introductory page. For the past 30 years, the Twin Cities have enjoyed steady growth in the economy. Our gross domestic product is increasing per capita. Real income is increasing per capita. And so we want to continue, obviously, on those trend lines. On page 3, one of the reasons why we are as strong as we are is because we do have a lot of Fortune 500s. I think we're third highest in terms of Fortune 500s per capita. A lot of the names you know and some of the names you may not be as familiar with. Obviously the 3Ms and the Ecolabs, some of the great new companies, they're not new so much anymore. But every time I drive by the corner of St. Clair and Hamlin and I look at that little building that is now a consignment shop that started off as Sound of Music many, many years ago that turned into Best Buy, you realize why some of this entrepreneurial acceleration is so important, because it really just takes a creative mind and a business plan, and great things can happen. And I think that that's been part of our history in the state of Minnesota and in this region. Carol Merrill is going to be assisting me here with the slides. One of the things that we're trying to identify is what are the strong clusters in this region, what are the strengths that we can build on, how do we kind of take our asset base as we already have it and really start to grow that, and I think that it's a kind of a thoughtful approach. if you one of the things that we are probably the best at, one of the things that we have the greatest strength in, is first of all we have the University of Minnesota, a world-class research institution that is ranked seventh in terms of patent revenue generated from the research of the university. We are fifth among all states in patents per investment dollar. I won't go too deep into that. In addition to the University of Minnesota, we obviously have the Mayo Clinic, which depending upon which day is either part of our region or just part of our broader state perspective, but a critically important partner that we think that we can leverage and really help us with R&D, help us with entrepreneurs, help us take some of this research that's being done and take it to market so that we can hopefully create some additional jobs. We have one of the things that sometimes is looked at as a challenge, but I think is really an asset for us, is the number of languages that are spoken in our public schools. I look at those 100 languages that are spoken in the Minneapolis or the St. Paul public schools and say those are 100 ambassadors to different parts of the world, that if we can figure out how to open up markets, we potentially have some great kind of home-based strength that we can tap into. Obviously, if you look at any kind of scorecard of the Twin Cities, we rate very, very highly on a lot of different fronts, you know, everything from the rate of volunteerism, theater seats per capita. Obviously, we have a fit city, fit region. We have all of our major franchises in terms of major sports, although I don't know if you can count the Timberwolves among them. But as we go into the playoffs with the Wild, we are going to be marketing that. We just have, you know, one of the things that we're trying to do is stop apologizing for the fact that we're a four-season market, that winter is as difficult as it can be when you get 13 or 14 inches of snow over a holiday weekend, is still a wonderful place. And, you know, whether it's the pond hockey tournament or cross-country skiing or outdoor skating, whatever it is, we need to market that. We need to say this is what we are. It may not be for everybody, but we're not going to change that, and we ought to really kind of just accept that and own it. One of the challenges that we face is that the trend lines are not going in the right direction. The what has made us strong in the past, those 30 years of growth that you saw in GDP and per capita income, the trend lines are starting to go in the wrong direction. We're lagging employment growth. We have the achievement gap that I know a lot of us have talked about over the last several years. Very significant issue that needs to be addressed. We have negative workforce growth expected after 2010. In other words, our growth is not going to come inside the Twin Cities. If we're going to have job growth and talent growth, it's going to be people migrating into this community, which is one of the reasons why it's so important for us to be able to market that. And one of the things I think is really our greatest challenge, you know, when you think about that Sound of Music store starting on the corner of University or St. Clair and Hamlin, we have fallen in our rate of entrepreneurship per capita in the last couple of years from 22nd to 48th. I think if you look at any of these trend lines, that would be the one that is the most challenging and one that we need to do something about. Again, as we looked around and as the Itasca folks talked around, Kathy Schmidelkoffer is here, who's the loan executive from General Mills that has been leading our efforts. What we saw is that we lacked a coordinated approach that other communities had. Communities that really didn't have the asset base to promote that we have were doing better than we were in terms of job creation, growth, retention, because they had a marketing plan that was put together that went out to site selectors, that had a kind of an organized database that said what sites were available, so that if a company was looking for a particular type of location with access to certain types of transportation, it would be very easy for that site selector to be able to identify that. The great story that we have heard over and over again is that when our Twin Cities-based Medtronic was looking for a new place to locate a facility, we weren't even on the radar. And it wasn't because of any negative factors. It just was we didn't show up on the list. We weren't there marketing ourselves the same way other communities were. So it wasn't that they looked at us and then got to the point where they said it's too expensive to do business there, or you didn't have the right asset base or whatever. We just never got into the game, and that facility eventually went down to San Antonio. So at this point, what I'd like to do is have Doug talk a little bit about, again, some of the regional efforts around this that he has been instrumental in leading. It's one of the great strengths. Again, if you were going to list all the great assets that we have, CEOs that really get it, that work very hard, that are very community-focused, are key to that, and I don't think there's anybody that has been better than that than Doug Baker.
Well, thank you, Mayor, and appreciate the time.
Welcome
here
to our committee. Give your name for the record so 100 years from now we know you were here.
Well, that'd be terrific. At least someplace it'll be on record in 100 years. Doug Baker, I'm CEO of Ecolab down the street on Wabasha. So what I wanted to share with you is some work that we did. The first thing we set out to do is do an assessment of, if you will, this region, the Twin Cities, the MSA, and how do we stack up when we start looking at ourselves versus other regions. And so we've broken this down into two parts. There's, if you will, the product side of this. How do we look from a cost, quality of talent, quality of life, etc. element? And then how are we doing marketing ourselves, regardless of how we stack up? And so first let me share how we looked when we did a comparison of other regions. And so this is obviously a summary sheet. And what we have here is what we considered and ended up to be what we thought the five key attributes were. And the red is negative and the green is positive and the yellow is relatively neutral when you stack it up to other markets that we would compete against. And so certainly, as Mayor Coleman just went through, we've got very strong attributes in terms of quality of life, and I would also say quality of labor or human capital. Highly educated workforce, right? In part, I'll talk a little bit when we get to the red up there that we have high wages or high cost labor, but in part that is a reflection of high quality of labor too. So we have strengths in quality of life, strengths in human capital. Really, when we stack up infrastructure, i.e. commute times and the like, we would call this not a strong selling point, nor is it really going to be a big detractor as we go through. And that's basically because there's a lot of people with traffic issues and the like. Innovation and startup, which Amir is going to come back and talk about in a little bit. If I had a surprise through all this work, it is really how poorly we're stacking up in this area. If you consider, we have the university, we have a lot of R&D-centric businesses in this community, very strong and high human capital attributes. We have plenty of financial resources in the community. So what is it? You've got the ingredients for great entrepreneurial initiative, but in fact, we're not doing very well here. And one of the initiatives is, how do we do better? Because it is not an issue of not having the talent, ideas, and or capital, but somehow they're not forming into businesses like they once were. So it's something that this community needs to look at. Cost of doing business is, if you will, probably the standout negative that we had when we stacked it up. So some of the facts, Minnesota's corporate tax today is third highest at 9.8%. And I would also point out that this is in a country with now the second highest, but soon to be the highest corporate tax. And the reason this is relevant is you stack these two on. That is what Minnesota companies pay. And when we are out competing globally, we are at a significant disadvantage because of the overall corporate tax rates we pay. So if I want to buy a business, and I'm headquartered here, and I want to buy it in Europe, and I'm competing against people paying 15% and 20%, not in the 40s, it is a real hindrance because they can pay more for that business than I can. They get more money out of it than I do. And so as a result, in the technology race and some of these other races, this is a long-term drag, I believe, on the economy overall. So it's an issue, and people do look at it. We rank 43rd in overall tax climate, and then back to the wage labor rates, we were eighth highest out of 383 MSAs. And I would say that's two things. We have high wages, but we also have high quality of labor. In a lot of ways, I think we have a strong human capital story. The assessment then of how are we marketing ourselves. So whatever the product is, I mean, we do have attributes, and when we really assess this, we didn't give ourselves very high marks as a region. We are not doing the four key things very well. We don't have a unified regional vision. When people move here, they don't think they're moving to they don't think they're moving to St. Paul, or when we're recruiting, they think they're moving to this metro area I recruit people here all the time and work to convince them to move here. We are headquartered in St. Paul. Many of our folks live in St. Paul. But you know what? They live in Woodbury. They live in Edina. They live in Minneapolis. They live around the arena, and they work to find what's important to them. People outside consider this one large metro area. We don't have a vision or a credible story in how we talk about this area that has a lot of strong attributes. Central governance around economic development. You have a lot of entities. You have St. Paul, Minneapolis, a lot of large suburbs. We've got the Met Council, et cetera. What is the unifying growth? How are we, if we bring in prospects, going to govern where those prospects go? How do we play amongst each other so we don't end up in bidding wars that are costly for the communities? And how are we going to do this? There is no really set central governance. Marketing campaign, if you don't have a vision, it's hard to have a marketing campaign. So we don't really have one. We can develop one. We have More to Life, Positive Minnesota, but we do not have one that speaks, we think, to the regional effort and also sector focus. What are we going to concentrate on? Is it new energy? Is it life sciences? Where do we think we should put our emphasis as we go forward from a strategic standpoint? So real work to do in that area. So let me talk about some regional strategies, if I can. We looked at this and tried to simplify, say there's three ways to drive job growth. We need to retain the companies that are here and convince them to expand here. It's very important. We need to also create an entrepreneurial environment, or recreate one, I might say, because it's going to create new businesses that we hope, just as Mayor Coleman talked about, turn into the next Best Buy, next 3M, or next, God forbid, Ecolab. Right? We need also then to do a much better job attracting businesses here. And so this doesn't necessarily mean we're going to have Boeing now move from Illinois to Minnesota, but there are a lot of regional investments that are made by large corporations, and this is a very attractive region if you're building R&D, right? If you are looking for educated workforce and you need that type of center, this would be a great place to put it. May not be the greatest place from a transportation standpoint. We do have Four Seasons, but we're also north. But there is a lot of things that we can do here that I think we could go out and drive if we got it together. So today, I think there's been strong leadership from the public sector. Mayor Coleman, Mayor Ryback, other mayors, the counties have been coalescing and driving this. We have a lot of public-private partnerships moving. There are a lot of initiatives. They are under these headings. The two that we're going to talk to are really the Regional Economic Development Partnership, that is the regional vision, the regional marketing, and then also an entrepreneurial accelerator, which Mayor Coleman will talk about once I walk through the Regional Economic Development Partnership. So through all this work, we decided what we needed to do was create a new economic development partnership, which we've done. The objective or the mission of this is nonpartisan. Our job is to grow jobs. It is a private-public partnership. It is going to focus on scope, if you will, initially as a 13-county MSA of the greater Minneapolis-St. Paul region. The activities: set the economic development region or vision and strategy, create the branding and marketing, partner on retention and expansion, and coordinate with efforts, say, out of the Chamber and others who are really working on Grow Minnesota efforts. We're also going to develop business attraction programs. So where are we right now? Well, we've made a lot of progress in a short period of time. We are very close in the final stages of hiring a CEO. It is an outside economic development professional who has started this up quite successfully in regions before. We have a lot of people locally who have local knowledge, know the attributes. We felt it was important to bring somebody in who had the economic development background, worked with site selectors, worked this community previously, to give us, if you will, a leg up as we start this. So we are confident we will have this in place within a month. Number two, we needed to secure the investment. As I mentioned, the plan was to do a public-private partnership. I am delighted to say, through great effort, particularly from Kathy, who was introduced earlier, we have already come very close to securing our first year $2.8 million funding. We have roughly $900,000 from six counties and 14 cities combined, and we have over $1.5 million already pledged from the private sector. companies like ours, General Mills, and many others. And we have $1 million in outstanding asks. Most of that we anticipate coming through as they go through their process. So there has been terrific, widespread community engagement, both from the companies, the business community, and also the public sector, which I think is a terrific sign. We have already incorporated this group. We have had our first formation board meeting. We are lining up an executive committee and a board, creating board governance, and how are we going to run this in a way that is quite transparent and will work, and make sure we do the right things. That's a long way down the road. And we are now going to start working on rules of engagement. We are going to be successful. We will bring in candidates who will want to relocate or invest in this community. How are the public entities going to work together, and what are the rules that are going to govern where these businesses go, and how we work those things through, which is always a challenge. It's a manageable challenge. So we're quite excited about those efforts. We also have Accelerate MSP.
Thank you, and this is obviously a very high-level overview, Mr. Chair, and but it's important. I think the stuff that Doug just outlined is among the most important work that I think we'll ever do in this community. To be able to keep us from being the best-kept secret in America, we can't afford to be the best-kept secret anymore. We need to let people know what we have out there. The story that is told is when Kathy Schmidelkoffer went out to visit the folks from Kansas City, a region that, you know, nice region, but I don't think has the assets that we have to market. Some of the folks down there said their greatest fear was that the Twin Cities would ever get their act together because they couldn't compete against us if they were able to do the same things that they were doing in terms of marketing their region. So that strategy is important. Within that strategy is Accelerate MSP, which is really our opportunity to drill down and have a very focused business strategy around entrepreneurial acceleration. Several years ago, we were approached by Cerdna and Knight and Jumpstart from Northeast Ohio, which was kind of being positioned as a strategy. Obviously, Northeast Ohio has some huge problems that we don't have, but from a strategic standpoint, they're pretty well set to figure out how they can help their economy grow in that region. The city of St. Paul was approached, and we said, look, this has to be a regional effort. So we put together this accelerator. We are working on it, again, just very quickly. This is the idea of how do we help the next generation of entrepreneurs. Who is going to be the next Schultz? Who's going to be the next, I'm blanking on Medtronic, Earl Bakken, who's going to be the next person that invents that idea in their garage and really helps us become kind of a generator of jobs as a result of it. We've established a high-level stakeholder group to work with Jumpstart. We brought in the University of Minnesota and others. We are collecting a lot of data just to really figure out what is our baseline out there and what do we have and what are the specific strategies that we need to have in place. We think that the plan will be presented by late this spring, and then hopefully have the implementation really start to flow as a result of that. We do believe that this is incredibly, again, very high level, but we think that this focused strategy, together with what the Regional Economic Development Partnership is doing, will position us well into the future for job creation, growth, and retention, and have those trend lines that have been trending downward over the last few years start to go back up and as we compete in the global environment.
So regional partners are collaborating in a number of areas to help drive job growth. The Itasca project, which we talked about, which has now created this regional initiative, we think is going to be a very important convening board to help drive this and coordinate both the private and public sectors. But we also have a number of other very important initiatives. The Regional Council of Mayors are working on a number of important things. We have ULI, Department of Employment and Economic Development, or DEED. We've got a whole number of very important groups that we believe are coming together to help stimulate job growth, which is job one if we're going to get this thing moving in the right direction, and we are working hard to do that.
And with that, Mr. Chair, we'd stand for questions if there are any.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and what a great presentation. And I was a member of the Small Business Caucus last year, and we did have this presentation, or most of it, and it's really exciting to see. I'm just wondering, you know, when you talk about Kansas City versus Minnesota, I always think of walleyes versus catfish. So, I mean, I think, you know, we really have a lot to talk about here that is exciting for other people to come and enjoy. And I'm just kind of wondering, do you have any feeling yet, because we did pass some tax credits last year for what I think were very important. One was the Angel Investor Tax Credit, one was the R&D, and one was the Historic Building Renovation Tax Credit. I can't remember the exact name of it. Do you have any feel for, has that helped your efforts?
Mayor.
Mr. Chair and Representative Scalzi, I don't know that we have any firm data on that yet, because I don't know that that has really gotten to the point where people are able to take advantage of it. I may be wrong on that. But I do know that in my conversations, just the passage of that was incredibly important, because people realized, particularly the Angel Investor Tax Credit, that we are at a competitive disadvantage with regions across the country, not the least of which is Northern California, in terms of where that those angel credits or those angel investors are going. There are a lot of factors in that, but certainly anything that we can do to encourage people to invest and reinvest in this community is going to be incredibly important. So I don't have any data before me that could tell you what the impact of that has been to date. But I will say that it was quite important symbolically, particularly as it combines with both the Metropolitan Business Plan and the Regional Economic Development Partnership.
Representative Scalzi.
And just as a follow-up, and have you? I mean, I always think, you know, we really should sell our whole state, because as the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, however many counties, 13 counties. That lifts the whole state. So it's not just this area, it's the whole state that would be lifted by a process such as this. I'm just wondering if you can come up with a better name other than the Regional Economic Development Partnership.
Yeah.
There's got to be a kind of a catchy name that we can use, and are you working on that?
We figure almost any name will be better than that name. So that is the official title. It is not going to be the marketing name nor the name that we communicate broadly, but it is the working name currently.
Mayor?
Chair and Representative, we do think, obviously, this is, you know, one of the things that I have stressed is that for Minnesota to be strong, we have to recognize we're all in this together. And obviously, because we're the largest metropolitan region, we're going to drive a lot of the economic growth. But the growth here is also going to help Rochester. It's going to help Duluth. It's going to help Windham and Winona and other places. So we very much view this, and I've already had some preliminary conversations with some of the new commissioners. We believe that this will lead to a broader statewide partnership as well.
Representative Leidiger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I applaud all the new energy that's going into this, because certainly whatever we can do during these times to promote economic growth, we've got to do. But we have another new program. And my concern is that over the years, we've got all these dead soldiers laying on the side of the road, and we keep funding these things, and here's another new entity that we're going to put together, and we're going to ignore all these other economic development groups that are out there. And I think of, you know, the St. Paul Port Authority. I know they're out there doing their thing. There's a lot of groups. There's got to be 30, 40 groups that are out there. And there's a lot of funding that's going out there, and now here we got this whole new overriding group that's going to do something, pull it together. I don't know. Do we have a plan to address all these other groups and pull them together, or are we going to disband a lot of these groups? Where's the savings going to come in on this as well? We have to look at that as well, especially during these times.
Representative Gunther and Representative, I think the critical piece on this one, first of all, let me just speak to the kind of the new energy and focus on this. And I always use the Garrison Keillor line that a Minnesota extrovert is someone who stares at the other person's shoes. And that's kind of, we've taken that approach to economic development, which is, you know, well, we have all these great things to market in this region, but we don't really want to tell, we don't want to brag. And so we don't get out there, we don't talk to site selectors, we don't talk to other regions, we don't look for companies, and we need to do this. And so that's the beauty of this particular this entity, is that it has the ability for us to shout to the rest of the world, hey, look at us. It may not be the right spot for you for whatever reasons, it may not meet your business needs, but at least get us on your radar so that you can do this. But that doesn't negate the need for, you know, individual cities' economic development strategies, or the Port Authority, or in our instance, the Capital City Partnership with that Doug Baker has been involved in as well. Because even within this region, what we hope we'll be able to do is to have that regional attraction strategy, but within that, there are still going to be, you know, are you better off located here in St. Paul because you have access to this set of assets, or are you better off on the West Metro side or in the South Metro side? We think that there will be the greatest efficiency is going to be having it tied into a broader vision, so that as some of our economic development entities on the local level, some of them may go away, some of them may be able to be consolidated. But they're going to be a lot more efficient at the very least, and they're going to be tied into a broader strategy that we believe will be much more successful than any individual. We don't have the resources in the city of St. Paul to be marketing ourselves to, you know, to groups in Florida. We just don't have that capacity to do that. This regional entity can do that and then help each of our communities prosper as a result of it. As I say, we got to grow the pie. Once the pie grows, then we'll all have a chance to have our piece of that as it grows.
President Leidinger.
So we've created this entity without a plan.
No, let me offer this.
Please.
I would say when we did the work, if you were going to, one would not be the right answer. If you're going to have one entity driving economic development for this region, it would be the regional. You have to have this if you're going to be successful in this day and age, and we don't have it. So this is a very important deal, and I would say I point to how quickly we were able to raise the money from multiple sources, and much of this is repurposed money. So there are, I think that is an important point. Two, you need individual economics. So Capital City, the mayor asks myself and Carlene Rhodes to look at Capital City and look at the number of groups and how do we propose repurposing this. So Capital City, part of that funding, is now going towards this regional entity because we have redesigned what the Capital City Partnership is going to do. It's going to be laser focused on economic development at the request of the mayor, which I think is exactly the right thing. So there is repurposed money here. But I would tell you this regional idea, and to say we don't have a plan, and I'm being a little circumspect as I run through this quickly, we have very clear vision of how this is going to operate. We are bringing in people who have operated these in complex regions before also. There are governance principles that we are going to go follow that we know will help us, but we also know that there are going to be some sparks. And I would expect, and I hope there's some friction, because it's going to be a sign of our success as we go forward. But we are not going to be successful, I believe, long term, if you do not have a healthy, organized, regional economic development program up and running.
May I follow up, please?
Sure.
What what's your vision on and what the state is to put into this group?
Zero, which is a good ask.
That's okay.
Okay. So we'll start there and we can negotiate down. but really, we don't believe it's a state. This is, we have gone out, we have asked for funding from the cities and counties who are going to benefit from this. The scope initially is the 13, right? Is it MSA, 13 county. Mm-hmm. That's what our initial focus is. You have to have focus, and we're going to go drive it. So you have corporations who have pitched in multi-year commitments to fund this, because they also understand that it's our responsibility to make sure this is a healthy community long-term, too. It's where we bring people. So we are not coming to ask the state for money. I agree with the mayor that I don't think Minnesota can be healthy without this region being healthy. I would also say this region needs a healthy Minnesota. So, I mean, it is very interlinked, but we are going to focus on making sure we're doing what we need to do to drive economic health of this region.
Just one last comment. And I agree. I mean, I've seen these before in other cities. But I just caution that we leave a lot of other, we must bring in a lot of the other organizations into working on this.
And there is a vision from the governance model that there is a partner group that is meeting quite regularly that is comprised of all the other economic development groups in this region. It is going to work, if you will, as one large group, but there's going to be leadership from the region and a governance model to make sure that we work well and play well together as we go forward.
And I also applaud, Mr. Chairman, I also applaud that we do have a lot of the private organizations coming into this. This makes a lot of sense to me, and most of these kinds of organizations will not get off the ground without it. But when I talk about before, as I was talking about the state dollars coming in, it should also mean that when it comes to LGA, we don't have the LGA money that has to go into this. This is where the private sector really, really picks up the slack, I think.
Mayor?
Representative and Mr. Chair and Representative, one thing I would just say is that, and Doug alluded to this thing, but we did step back and do a whole assessment that kind of was going simultaneously about this, about, you know, what are all these organizations designed to do? What are the overlapping missions? Are they focusing on what they should be focusing on, and how do we change that if necessary? So we had gone through in the last 3 or 4 years in the city of St. Paul a very similar process to, I think, what you're describing, and that led to a very, very significant change in the Capital City Partnership that we could, I won't go into detail here, but if you want some more information, we'd be more happy to provide that for you.
Thank you, Mayor. Appreciate it.
We have McFarland, Mahoney, and Pay Mariette.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for coming, Mr. Baker. You also did this at the One Minnesota Conference, and so it's good to hear it again because it sinks in a little bit more. Last summer, I had the opportunity to be a guest of the Minnesota Chamber when they had some site selectors coming to Minneapolis. I don't know if you've seen their report. It's just interesting to see what other people are looking at when they come to the state. I guess I'm wondering if you can make some comment. You commented about the corporate tax being third highest. How do you see the overall tax climate as far as property taxes versus other regions, and also the income taxes, especially when we want to attract these high-quality people into our state? How does that affect that?
Mr. Baker.
Yeah. Well, look, it's all very relevant. I mean, it is. When you are looking at placing a business or expanding a business, you look at all costs, including taxes, property taxes, income taxes, and the like. And I would say, I think the obvious answer, but it sometimes gets lost, is I think any time you are on the far right or far left of any of these scales, it becomes a little dangerous. I have lived in low-tax environments where I was forced to send my kid to private schools. And I will tell you, that was no savings, right, from that standpoint. But I would also say we've got to be quite thoughtful about what our tax policy here is. And when I bring talent here, I often have to up my offer to offset the delta in personal income tax. This becomes a problem for a business because it makes us less competitive simply because we're here. And so we do need to understand that. We are competing for talent globally. We are competing for talent around the country. My 12-person team, I think three people have Minnesota roots. And that's probably not unusual. We're running a global organization. 1% of my sales are in Minnesota. 50% of my sales are outside of the United States. But we have several thousand people here, and this has been an expanding workforce because of our success globally and throughout the United States. And I think Minnesota benefits just like we benefit from Minnesota. But I think it is very important to keep that in mind. And so we have concerns when we talk about upping corporate tax rates by reducing deductions, particularly foreign income, because it really makes us even less competitive overseas. And so it's a very big concern for almost every corporation headquartered here.
Representative, or Mr. Chair and Representative McFarland, I think one of the things that we want to stress, though, in this effort, because there are certain, to paraphrase Rumsfeld, there are certain knowns that we know and certain knowns that we don't know, and there are certain things that we can control immediately and certain things that we know that we need to do better at. And I think that that was what you saw from that site selector report, which was letting people know what your asset base was. This may not be the right environment for every company. We don't claim to be that. If it's purely a cost decision, under any circumstances, we wouldn't compete on that. But if you need a talented workforce, if you need a quality of life, if you need a lot of the amenities and access to a research institution or the Mayo Clinic or any of those things, that's what becomes the important piece. So cost is a factor, and we would be lying to ourselves if we didn't pretend that it was, or if we pretend that it wasn't. But the fact of the matter is, we know that if we sell what we have, we can be very successful, and some of those longer-term business climate issues will continue to be addressed.
Yep. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Mayor, the Angel Tax Credit has done about $7 million worth of certification, which translates to about $28 million. That's give or take a few million, two-thirds urban and one-third rural. They're now working to do the rural more than they are the urban, but that's not my question, but I figured I'd at least fill them in case somebody else asked them that question. He could at least answer it. Answer it better. Mr. Mayor, Mr. Baker, we have it. Your regional plan is a great idea. I have some concerns or questions about where you're going with it. You talk about entrepreneur, but you also talk about bringing companies in. Two entirely different things. The entrepreneur is a typically you need to cut through the red tape, and you need to fund them. We have two or three of the largest banks in the country with very strong presence here. So are the two or three big bankers, banking companies, a part of this group? Then the other question I have is, well, a bunch of them, but I'm going to ask just this other one. We can do all the trading from Minneapolis to St. Paul that we want. We don't really grow Minnesota that way as well as we probably could selling our products, as your company does, globally. Are you looking at or having some kind of a part of your group work with these smaller companies or entrepreneurs on how they sell their product worldwide or across the nation or hemispherically? Because we, you know, our largest trading partner is Canada. One of the next largest is Brazil or Mexico. I can't remember which. So we really do want to, I'd rather have money coming in from outside the state and staying here versus from Minneapolis to St. Paul or Duluth to St. Paul or Minneapolis. So those two questions. I mean, are the banks involved with this particular idea? And have they committed to helping some of these smaller companies grow? And what's the idea on mentoring and to a global issue?
Mr. Chair and Representative Mahoney, first of all, both of the Campbells from Wells Fargo have been deeply involved in the ITASCA group and have led that. Davis from U.S. Bank has also been very, very involved in these efforts. And so specifically what they're pledging, quite frankly, the two people that deserve and need to be singled out for praises are not from the banks, but Ken Powell from General Mills and Marilyn Carlson Nelson have both been extraordinary in leading this effort. But the Campbells and Davis, have been very involved in these discussions. One of the things I just wanted to mention in response to some of the export stuff, which is it is critically important. Some of you are aware that the Secretary of Commerce was in last week, very specifically talking about the strategy of how do we increase exports from our region, from the United States to other parts of the world. And so some of the strategies that need to be done both from the state and a local level are going to be critically important to that. But I like the concept that some of our partners who already are experts in exporting, that that there could be a way to assist some of the smaller entrepreneurs and emerging companies as they try to figure out how to get into different markets. One of the statistics that the Secretary shared with us was that, first of all, only a very small percentage of companies in America export, and of those, the vast majority only export to one country. So if you can assist them in helping expand, they're already exporting. If you can just help them start to export to additional companies, whether that's, you know, they're currently going to Mexico and we could get them up to Canada or get them over to Europe or get them over to Asia, that would be critically important. So I believe that on both the national level and on a local level, we are starting to understand that important dynamic.
Hey, Representative Paymar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mayor, and Mr. Baker, for the presentation. It was very good. And Mr. Baker, thank you for your commitment to St. Paul. If this is premature, the question, you can just say it's premature. But I, can you point to another model or another metropolitan, other metropolitan areas in the United States that have successfully implemented this kind of regional coordination? I see you've hired a CEO, I can't remember if I saw that on the slide yet, that had some national experience elsewhere. It would be nice to, for this committee, or for me anyway, to look at some of those other metropolitan areas, because I do agree that it's, I think there's some complexities here in trying to coordinate the myriad economic development agencies in the metropolitan area, and higher ed, and the cities, and the counties, and the Met Council. I mean, I'd like to just to maybe do a little research myself. If you could point me to a few areas.
Yeah, well, there are a number that we studied, but I guess I would point out Allegheny, which is Pittsburgh greater area, Charlotte, Austin, Texas, Kansas City, which we mentioned, which has some of the complexities we do, but so does Charlotte. Across the state lines, you end up very quickly down in South Carolina. I mean, it's almost one large metro now as you move down to Greenville and the like. So those are some of the areas that we study. They all believe they have significantly benefited. If you look at pre and post implementation, there are signs that they've benefited from this. I would almost go that we are becoming quickly very much in the minority of not having this type of structure for a region. And there is strong belief that economic engines, that regions are going to be the economic engines, and that we need to understand and coordinate the effort much more closely if we expect to compete moving forward, right? So, but those are some of the markets that I think you could look at, and if you would like, we'd be happy to send you some of the data that we have on those markets.
I'd love to see it. I don't know if anyone else would.
Mr. Chair and Representative Paymar, I would just add that the site selectors that Representative McFarland had referenced, one of the things the gentleman that helped put this all together had been in the business for, you know, more years than I've been alive. And he said, you know, 20, 30 years ago, you were on the top of the Twin Cities were on the top of everyone's list as a place to go and do business, and you have completely fallen off of that radar. And it wasn't for any particular reason other than other regions were starting to push these things, and other regions had a coordinated approach, and we didn't. And so site selectors are like everybody else. They go for the easy kill. And if they don't have to do a ton of research for them to be able to present to a corporation that's looking for a company, saying here's your ideal location, they're not necessarily going to do that. We've got to make it easier for the people that are making these decisions to at least come in and kick the tires of the Twin Cities. If they choose to come here, that's great. If they choose to go somewhere else, then that's a business decision. But right now, until we get on that radar because of this effort, then we're just failing ourselves.
If I could mention, in the mail Friday, so I'm going through this weekend, there was a large, glossy, about 8-page brochure from Atlanta to me, and was basically asking if I'm down there for the Masters, which I won't be, by the way, but if it's down there for the Masters, they have pre and post events in Atlanta that they would like to host CEOs so that they can convince us to either invest or relocate there. Now, this is very typical. There is not a week that goes by that I don't receive a mailing from either another region, from another state, even another country, trying to entice us to put some of our dollars there. This may not be an outright relocation, but it is certainly, if you're expanding, we want you on the horizon. We are not doing this work. Right? I mean, it's just fundamental. And I agree with the mayor. I mean, cost notwithstanding, and it's an issue, but it's not the only issue. We have a story to tell, and we need to get out there and start telling it, because you can't even get lucky if you're not out making your case on a day-to-day basis. And so I believe this is just like a huge miss for the region that we are moving to go address and fix.
Thank you.
And by the way, I did get an invitation. I was with the mayor of Augusta last week. So
are you going?
Well, I'm not going. I don't know. Maybe we could go explore.
Mr. Mayor, I've seen you golf.
Yeah, but if we removed a certain irritant while I'm golfing.
You weren't playing with him.
He's always, he never gives me a chance to just swing. That's always an issue.
Well, there's a couple questions I have. You know, we have a lot of states, our surrounding states, with job incentive programs, and I hate the idea of having to bid for industries to come into Minnesota, but we certainly have states like Georgia bidding to have our industries come to Georgia. We certainly have Wisconsin with 48 job incentive programs to get our industries there. They're the winner, by the way. I have a friend of mine that's a banker in La Crosse. He calls me up every time Wisconsin gets another Minnesota industry into Wisconsin, and he calls way too often. But you think that we should have more job incentive programs to help curb the desire of somebody else going for that free property tax for 9 years or whatever it is. They're giving them free lots to build your industry in, certainly tax incentives all the time. Do you think that is something that we should pay attention to, or is Minnesota so nice that no industry would dare leave the state because of our wonderful workforce? And I wish you'd write a book to that effect. I really would love to read it. Another thing is how about barriers to growth? Do we have barriers to growth that are prohibiting industries and businesses to come into Minnesota? And if so, which are the most egregious? And you don't have to have an answer to that. I'd love to have one in writing. But I think, unfortunately, I look at Northwest Airlines with Delta in Atlanta. I look at their corporate tax rate versus ours. And it didn't take a rocket scientist to figure out why most of Northwest Airlines employees are going to Georgia and none of them are staying here, or not as many as we'd like to have. Yeah. So those are things that bother me.
We have one answer.
No, I don't intend. And it's a very complicated question.
Yeah. But, Mr. Chair, I think that there are multiple reasons why certain things happen, but one of the interesting things, if we spent, some of us went down to Atlanta a few years ago, and one of the things that was very clear was the business community in Atlanta was organized in a way that we are not up here, to make sure that that was a one-way decision that was going to happen there, because there was a lot of pressure on the leadership of Delta at the time that whatever mergers they were going to have were going to be done with Atlanta to continue to be their base. Again, that's not the only factor. Costs are always going to be an issue. I think to your earlier question, the availability of certain tax incentives or free land or whatever that may be, there's no question that they will play a role in a decision, but they're not going to be the only determining factor. If they are, if that is in fact the case, we're never going to compete for those companies. But when you combine the package and the things that we can offer, including quality of life in the Twin Cities, including educated workforce, research institutions, et cetera, then cost becomes a factor, as we've mentioned. So I think that we should always kind of be looking at the spectrum of issues to determine what is it going to be most effective for us to lead job growth and job creation. But I think that we do ourselves a disservice if we focus in on one issue to the exclusion of all the other factors that businesses look at.
I would offer this. I agree it's not going to be a single issue. However, you could make cost an issue if we're not careful and thoughtful about it. And I don't know how to put it. So does it matter? It absolutely matters. I would say Delta ended up in Atlanta as much because Delta bought Northwest. It's the way it works, right? The conqueror takes the Concord and they move them down to that city. I mean, it's almost always how it works, unless there's some perverse incentive at work. So I would agree with the mayor that quality counts. However, we've got to be quite thoughtful. Mostly what we hear is it is very difficult here to get through the regulatory burdens. It's not the regulations per se. I'm sure somebody has a complaint about one or the other. It is how difficult it is to get an answer often. And so, you know, companies by and large want to do the right thing. They want to do right by their communities. They don't like to pollute. They want to live by the rules. They just want to know what are the rules and what do we have to do to comply. And if we aren't in sync, what is it that's out of sync? And quick answers and let's get going. Or tell me no and we'll go somewhere else. I mean, it is really that part of it which is being, I wouldn't say overly friendly, it's just being considerate that people have a lot of dollars to invest and they want to invest. And Minnesota does not have a very good reputation when it comes to navigating the regulatory hurdles. It's not the hurdles themselves, it's navigating them. And I really think that's something the state should take on, because we're not talking about lax standards on pollution. We're not talking about lax standards in terms of financial accountability. We're just talking about, can we get permitting on a timely basis? Can we go build these buildings? Can we build these businesses? And sometimes the answer needs to be no, for good reason. Just a fast no is helpful, right? I mean, it's really as simple as that.
Well, any more questions? Representative Mulry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I wasn't going to get into it, but it keeps coming up. But I'm the only one here that's been on the tax committee 10 years, and ever since coming here, I've asked the corporations if that's a factor, and almost every single one of them has said it's not in the top half dozen or so. For instance, on industrial property tax, we're in the bottom eight nationally, so it doesn't exactly drive people out. If Ecolab is only 1% here, as we move towards single sales factor, which we're going fairly quickly towards, that's going to reduce the corporate tax effects here. But even though we have the highest corporate tax rate or near the highest, who cares what your tax rate is at the highest? It's what you actually pay. And we're in the middle on that. So there's a lot of figures get thrown around. Everybody I've talked to has mentioned the last factor that he brought up, and that's the regulatory problems, not that we have too difficult a regulations, but they're held back on them. I just lost a 100-year-old corporation in my district, and the president told me that he thought that it was getting, obviously he was being facetious, but he said that every time he wanted to move his desk in his office, he had to get 25 permits from Minneapolis. So obviously that's not correct, but it was driving them, since they produced a lot of different types of machines. We've got to look at the other factors. But with regard, companies also are getting, they pay more for labor here, but they're getting a lot. My cousin ran the tech for Baltimore VA Hospital, and his previous boss came out and ran it here. And he told my cousin, he said, you can't believe it out here. The people at level GS 6 and 7 are doing what 12 and 13 GS are out there. He said the workforce here is just incredible. So, yeah, you pay more, but you get a lot more done for it. But the one thing I've always heard from companies is the regulation problems.
Stensrud.
Yeah, just one comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Baker, I love these charts when you give the assessments of our marketplace. I think it's real important. And to Representative Mullery's point, while regulation is like the number one, we can't ignore that blinking red warning sign that says the cost of doing business is alarming. And as a small business owner and someone who's also worked for large corporations, that's huge. We want green lights on here. We don't want to be the cheapest place to do business necessarily, but this is saying that this is a warning for us, and I think we have to remember that as we make legislative decisions, we don't get to choose the consequences of our actions. We just make laws and pass regulation, and the result is red lights go off here and says we don't want to come to Minnesota if all things are being equal. And this is saying things are not equal, and we got to, if we can get this focused regional marketing plan, I think that's great. There may be some reservations on all the other economic development systems that are going on. We want to coordinate that, and we want to leverage that money towards a focused approach so that we can be the best place. I mean, in fact, we can't compete really well with Kansas City. Doesn't sit well with me. I think we got a lot more to offer. So I think I want red lights to turn green, and I think we need to do whatever we can to make that happen.
Mr. Chair and Representative Stensrud, I think recognizing cost as a factor, we also don't want to turn our green lights red. And so I think that the why you all get paid the big bucks is because this is going to be a very delicate balancing between changing those factors that we know need to be adjusted without destroying the things that do allow us to market. So this is going to be a difficult balancing effort. I think that the nice thing about this regional effort is it is business, government, nonprofit sector, all kind of in this together, trying to figure out how do we craft this, accelerate the things that we have going for us without taking away, while adjusting some of those other factors.
I think the best thing that'll come out of the regional is when you're in the commercial market, you learn a lot. You learn a lot of things that you really are inconvenient. And we are going to get out there. We are going to compete as a region. We are going to, I think, have much better data as a result. And we can feed this data back. You can deal with it, ignore it. I mean, companies have to make these choices all the time. And I think it's going to be an important data source for the communities, for the region, and for the state. And we will certainly make it available. But we will all learn a lot when we get out there competing about what's really important, what do we need to go drive this. So.
Well, thank you very much, both of you. We have learned a lot from you. And please keep us informed with what's going on with your groups. And we'll look forward to having good information coming and great things happening because of your presence here. And I really believe that people should not complain about their taxes as long as they feel like they're getting worth for the money they're spending. And that's what you have to prove every day, Mayor.
We try.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman.
And I'd also like to announce that the presentation from Dr. David Crow, National Association of Home Builders, Dr. Crow cannot get here. He is stuck in a plane. So we will have now the Minnesota Youth Program presentation and overview. Please come forward. And while we're waiting for them to get ready, Representative Murray, you have read the minutes from the February 15th meeting. You have? Will you approve those minutes, please? Representative Murray approves the minutes from February 15th, I think. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. You'll pay attention, Nick. Welcome to our committee. Technology strikes again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Randy Johnson. I'm the Executive Director of Workforce Development Incorporated, representing the Workforce Investment Board of Southeast Minnesota. I'm here today with some other members. I have a business person here, Jeff Babbitt from Dairy Queen and Olivia, and I've got a couple other participants in the Minnesota Youth Program, because that's what I'm here to talk to you about today, about the value of that kind of thing. You have blue packets that were handed out, an awful lot of information in it. I'll try to condense what I can here as I start out, and then hand it over to other members for your comments and questions. I think we're all very aware that we've gone through a rather difficult recession. Some would say we have recovered. I believe we have, or at least we're in that mode here in Minnesota. But not all populations have benefited by that recovery as well. Nationally, we look at figures of youth ages 16 to 19 that would say that some 75% of those youth are not working. In fact, in Minnesota, if we add together the numbers from just a year ago here of those that are unemployed with those who are not in the labor force, we actually have 68%. So you can see we have a dilemma. It is something that's been growing over the last few years. Virtually every year over the last 13 years, we have decreased the participation rate of kids in that age group, age 16 to 19, as we go forward. The official unemployment rate here in Minnesota from a year ago was 21% overall, but I would point out that 40% of that of people of color, kids of color, are unemployed. So it's definitely something we need to pay attention to. We will have kids that are now going to be entering their third summer who are out of school and have yet to find a job. If we don't address those kinds of needs and issues that they have going forward, it's a dilemma for our community, certainly for employers, and for the students themselves going forward. Remind you that Minnesota Youth Program, MYP here, is the only statewide integrated youth job training program that the state of Minnesota operates here. It serves a group of low-income and at-risk youth ages 14 to 21 who lack academic and applied skills. The kinds of things that we do with these kids are perform career planning with our counselors. They're offered academic training in our modules here, reading, writing, math assessments. They're provided tutoring. They're helped with homework, both in the summer and year-round. They are offered computer and other kinds of hands-on classes. They're offered GED, connecting to GED preparation and testing, and even career readiness certification kinds of work. We help students understand life skills training so that they understand how to access housing, secure transportation, parenting issues, budgeting, health insurance, and many more topics. MYP then serves, Minnesota Youth Program serves a group of low income that's very diverse. They are extremely disadvantaged group of young men and women, and many of them with multiple challenges. Some of the statistics in your packet I'll just point out. When we work with these students, and by the way, we serve about 3,500 kids a year. This is a $3.5 million program that we are operating currently. We're about $1,000 per student or per participant served. I'd point out, though, that this funding level has been reduced consistently each year since 2001. So it's not something that has ballooned or kept up with the need as the need has progressed. Back to the groups that are engaged here, 92% of the kids that are being served in this program were not in the labor force when they were enrolled in this program. So we're definitely targeting that group that needs the help. 48% have a documented disability of some kind. 41% of them were on public assistance when they came to the program. 10% of them teen moms. 15% of them offenders. 10% of them dropouts from high school. 7% from foster care. And 4% are homeless. So you can certainly see that we have a challenge group that we're working with as we move forward here. The benefits that students receive or the participants receive in the Minnesota Youth Program, they certainly receive the benefits immediately of the earnings. But more than that, in a structured work experience, they're able to understand the benefits of work. Those kinds of educational opportunities also are afforded to them and the life skill training I mentioned. These are kids kids that benefit best by hands-on learning. And that's the kind of opportunities that they get when they come through this program. 100% of those that are enrolled receive some form of safety training, right to know or other kinds of safety training before they get started. 90% successfully complete and have demonstrated competencies in work maturity and work readiness. They receive academic credit in most cases back at school. In fact, some areas of the state have, according to our federal monitors, were astounded to find that one of the areas had 99% of the students receiving some kind of academic or service learning credit back at their school. Dropouts do return to school. That's a good thing. Savings are also projected due to reduced crime and judicial systems costs because of our help. And certainly there are savings due to welfare avoided. In fact, using our formula at the Minnesota Workforce Council Association that has used an annualized extrapolation of the work provided, that if you add together the welfare avoided for those that were on that now aren't once they leave our program, together with the new taxes paid, that we calculate a $4.25 return for every dollar invested in this program. So it certainly has been substantial benefit to folks, and of course there are these unquantifiable benefits of increased self-esteem and the development of citizenship and parenting skills. So we think it's a very valuable program, but I think I'd pause now and have you hear from some of the folks that have benefited from this program to go forward.
Very well.
Thank you, Randy. My name is Jeff Babbitt. I own the Dairy Queen Grill and Chill Restaurant in Olivia, Minnesota. A newer owner. My wife and I have owned the restaurant for just under a year. But in that time, working with our local employment specialist, she has given us the opportunity to work with four different youth through this program. Currently, we've worked with this. We've had four youth come through. We currently have three active enrollees. Of those three, two of them are teen parents. And I guess I say that only because I speak to what Randy brought up about their the disadvantages that these kids have when they're coming in sometimes to a first job situation. I was asked to come by and speak to you by our employment specialist in our area to give you the perspective of a business owner who has directly benefited from this program. I'd like to speak to the importance that this program has had in our business, one of them being the targeted access. Being in the fast food or what we call quick service restaurant business, it's not exactly a high wage industry. We deal commonly with a high rate of turnover. We don't provide oftentimes a lot of career type positions for people to stay at long term. So it's the work that we do is targeted pretty well to this particular disadvantaged group, many of whom, as I mentioned, are coming in and experiencing a job for the first time. This has given us an opportunity to target those youth. If I get and I probably get 3-4 applications a month throughout the year on average, many of which I sift through as a business owner, and I might call them and ask for an interview, and I might not. When I think about the kids that we've worked with through this program, they might not have gotten a second look from me when I had other applications to compare them to. And I think that's one of the benefits of this program is that they directed these kids to me as a business owner. The other thing I think that's been important for us is the teamwork approach and the wage funding, which really takes the pressure off of a small business owner like myself, allowing us to take the extra time and the attention needed to devote to these young people and sometimes dealing with just the basic soft skill stuff, showing up to work on time, having enough responsibility to call in when they're going to be late or when they can't be there at all, finding somebody to work for them in place of their shift, and covering that. This affords me the opportunity, because their wages are being paid while I'm training them, to take the extra time and have the extra patience, if you will, to extend their employment long enough to get through some of those initial hurdles. I might not have the time or the patience or the money to be able to afford doing that with somebody who comes in off the street as an experienced workforce member. One of the other things I wanted to address was what I believe are the benefits to the youth. Number one, I think the pathway to a small business like myself, just the opportunity to get that first job. Like I mentioned, I might have overlooked their application originally but through this program they were off with, they were afforded that opportunity. Number two, real skill development. We're placing very young people into the real long-term sustainable jobs where they can get training on things like how to be a cook, a very transferable skill. They may not work at my restaurant for the next 20 years, but they have a skill they can take away with them and have that be a marketable skill somewhere else down the road. Benefits to the community. What I've seen is that these young people I've worked with, they're going out, they're becoming new entrants into the working, contributing community. These are young people who have lots of things going against them, and they might otherwise not really go out and try to create their own opportunities, but because of this funding, they've been placed in a job where we can help teach them how to become a productive member of the community. And in many cases, I think of one example, a young man that we interviewed prior to bringing him aboard under this program. When I asked him why, he was young, he's only 16 years old, I asked him, why do you want to work? There's a lot of kids your age going to high school who don't want anything to do with work. They want to play video games and hang out with their friends. Why do you want to work? He said, well, number one, I want to help my family. We don't have a lot of money, and I want to be able to help my folks. Number two, I'd like to be able to buy some nice stuff for myself. But what impressed me was from a 16-year-old young man telling me that his number one reason for working was to help out his family. The other benefit to the community, I believe, is taking these previously at-risk youth, or the potential of taking these previously at-risk youth, giving them a step up by bolstering their self-confidence, having success in that first job, and giving them opportunities to become contributing members of their community. Also, there's a cross-purpose in that building of self-esteem, I think, with the job. These kids also then gain confidence to continue pursuing that GED maybe after dropping out of high school, even going to college. One of the kids that we have right now finished with his high school credentials, and he's now taking college or classes at the local community college while still working for us. All good things. And as an employer, we've definitely directly benefited from that, and I believe the kids have as well. Thank you.
If you don't mind, I'll bring up a couple participants here.
Love to hear from
We have with us today Cedric Shande Jones, and from Ramsey County area, and Reuben Jones from South Central.
Okay, while they're coming up, Representative Mulroy, you have a question?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I remember when I carried this bill way back, and we got a huge increase, and then the governor was able to divert a majority of the funds to dikes and things, sandbagging up in flood areas, so that we didn't really achieve it. Have we ever put in some kind of restrictions so that doesn't happen again? Because it was a complete, and you were the co-author on it, and I remember.
I'm not aware of the fact that we did something to prohibit that from happening again.
Maybe we should.
I know it takes something like a national, a state disaster to take the money. I know it's that. But
well,
Elwood doesn't it? Huh? Yeah. something well, for us to think about. We'll talk about.
I think we should look at possible language.
Would you give your name and give us your testimony? Whoever's first.
My name is Cedric Shawnee Jones. I guess I sat up there for a long time trying to figure out how I was going to start this. Starting always seems to be the hardest part. But just
you're doing great.
Thank you. Well, I hate to admit it, but I come from a pretty statistic-driven background. I am practically a statistic. My childhood was a statistic. I came from a very dysfunctional situation, and wasn't exactly the model child. I had issues, and one of my biggest issues was trust in the adult figure, in figures of authority, and that hindered my ability to progress. And for the longest time, a good chunk of my childhood was spent ignoring the reality around me. And when I entered this program, I was 18 years old, so I was already past my childhood, but in reality, I was just entering it because I had just, in essence, woken up to the world. I had decided to actually live my life. I had a very chaotic school life. I moved to Minnesota 6 years ago, and that was kind of the beginning of my decline. And since I started the program, my worker, Julie Baker, really helped in pulling out, kind of breaking my shell. I really got comfortable around adults again. I started developing my own persona, which was really important to me. And I found my passion through this program. I would like to tackle the concept of my issues with job searching. My biggest problem when I started is I don't have any job experience. The job I'm at now is actually my first long-term job. And it always struck me that I never really had the motivation to go out there and look for jobs, because I always figured that I was competing with people with credentials and who had a better situation than I would. So I always figured, what was the point? I wasn't going to get it in the first place. And in the program, my confidence was boosted. And I'm sorry, please forgive the clumsy speech, but it was boosted. And I really saw that I did have a chance. And through this program, they got me into where I work now, which is St. Paul Youth Services. And I've been working there for five, going on 6 months now. And, you know, it's really not only given me the confidence to enter the job force, but it's also, on a personal level, it's really granted me networking. And I'm in college right now, and they're always going on and on and on about networking, and they never seem to actually give you any real life experience about networking. And I'm very hands-on, and I love the fact that while I'm here, I have met so many different people who are really going to make a big impact in my future, and already have, and they've set me on a path that I enjoy walking. An example of this is I'm a photography major, and photography, I was always one of those who saw photography as a waste of time. I never understood it at all. I have friends who do Facebook and MySpace and all that stuff, and they love the MySpace pictures and all that stuff, and it never really clicked for me. And I came about it by accident. I just decided I was having problems, and I just decided I wanted to go out for a walk, and I took my friend's camera. She let me borrow it. I just took it and went out for a walk, and discovered a passion for it. I love doing it. And I approached Julie and said, you know, this is what I want to do with my life. You know, I want to be a photographer, but schooling is expensive, and my family is not very rich. We don't have money. And so I started school at the Art Institutes, and my big problem was, without money, I was at a disadvantage. I couldn't do the homework because I couldn't buy the materials that was needed for the classes. I couldn't, half the time, transportation has been another really big problem for me, because I work with the public transport system to get to school, and I'm commuting from Maplewood to Minneapolis every day. And so, you know, the school's checkout system wasn't working because I would get overdue trying to get from home to school to return the camera, and it just was not working out. I was already like $300 in debt with the school, and I was barely into my second quarter. Wasn't working. So I approached Julie and let her know the situation, and Julie approached her director, and they decided that they would help me get a camera. And we went to National Camera and found a nice used SLR camera that was of school quality. And I mean, that was the best investment of my life. I walk around with it everywhere. It's actually back there. I mean, I don't leave the house with it. And I've really, really stepped up to the plate, because ever since I got that camera, I've not only been succeeding in school, but I've had a dream. You know, I know what I want to do. I know where I want to go, and I've been able to look for those people. You know, I just found a connection through St. Paul Youth Services that Julie hooked me up with, and he connected me to a person who's working for National Geographic, which is, like, amazing, because it's National Geographic. And, you know, and I've started developing a relationship, and this is why I'm talking about networking. You know, I never would have met someone who was a photographer for National Geographic, you know, if I hadn't gotten this opportunity. And just on an ending note, I feel, and a lot of my friends, and I've seen this, I have a little sister in California, there's a lot of us, I'm only one of many, there's a lot of us out there who have troubles coping, who probably have issues with their own personal issues with authority or anything, and this program has shown that it really does help bring out the best in us. It helps us chase down our own potential and take initiative for our lives. And I just don't feel like, I feel like the funding of this program, if this program wasn't funded, I never would have gotten my camera. I wouldn't be able to go to school. I wouldn't be here right now. I wouldn't be who I am right now. That's really crucial. And I think I'm really grateful, and I think there's a lot of people out there who would be grateful for it.
Yes, I'll go next. I'm Ruben. Excuse me. Reuben Eugene Jones, and from Mankato, Minnesota. Again, same, basically overall the same story except for the career paths. Again, grew up from an underprivileged family. Actually grew up in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I moved to Mankato, Minnesota as a young child. In and out of foster home with my younger brothers, who are also in the program as well. But, you know, when this program actually kind of discovered me, I didn't really, you know, find it. It found me. I was in high school, and then throughout the years I've been working as a custodian with my high school. Later on, towards the end of the years, a few years ago, I was working at the YMCA. So again, I was also getting a lot of skills and life skills from not just, you know, the work experience itself, but from working within the community, you know, with the YMCA. Got a lot of good, you know, job experience, and also just an overall experience in customer service, because that's what I'm leaning towards. I'm doing marketing management in college right now, and that's what I'm hoping to finish up pretty soon here in the next couple semesters. Hopefully I'll get that wrapped up. But that's my career path, is doing marketing management and sales. And just last summer I was working Finish Line as an intern, and that also led me to also continue working there now, independent of the program. But, you know, at the same time, just like the overall soft skills, like they were mentioning earlier with the with, you know, punctuality, attendance, you know, I've also learned, you know, you get to learn a lot of the interview process as well to help you later on when you're continuing to find work. But overall, like I said, it's going to be a lot shorter than Cedric, but overall the program has helped me a lot. And just to get right to the questions that you probably have, like he was saying, you know, if it wasn't for the program, I don't know where I'd be as well. And my younger brothers are really benefiting from the program as well today. So I would just like to end on that. But any other questions?
I got a question. Mankato, University of Minnesota Mankato, or South Central?
South Central.
South Central.
Yep.
Great school.
It is. I like it a lot.
Any questions from members? Carol. Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is for Mr. Johnson. I used to be on a school board, so I know that as a state, we have a responsibility to get our kids to graduate or get through there. And I'm, and we have alternative learning programs and centers and things like that. I'm seeing some overlap here, or are you coordinating with the education system? How's this working?
Definitely. Our programs typically
for youth programs have targeted those folks who are later in high school and on into what we'd call out-of-school youth, and many of those are found at alternative school programming. And so that's where we do a lot of the work, going into those very alternative school programming sites. And unfortunately, many of the alternative schools don't have much by way of career planning efforts or connection to jobs in the community, and so it's a very valuable resource to them.
So, Mr. Chair, so really you complement their programs? Or?
Definitely, okay. Complement them. And in order to get any kind of credit back at the schools, you really do need to communicate a plan. If it just came out of left field and said, by the way, I had this kid this summer, I bet you didn't know that, could you give him some credit? You know, you have to prepare that ahead of time with these intensive plans, so we do work hand in hand with them.
Mr. Johnson, exactly how are you funded? I look at Minnesota Youth. Is that we are youth Title 1B funding, or where's your money come from?
For youth programming, there are two programs in Minnesota currently. There is the Minnesota Youth Program that we're talking about here today, and another program somewhat larger federally, the Workforce Investment Act Youth Program. These programs are somewhat different in that their regulations or their rules are slightly different in that for eligibility. The Minnesota Youth Program is a little more flexible to be able to work with the situations that you just talked about here. The federal program would ask for multiple barriers and some other contingencies they put on that. I would have to point out that that program and those funding for those programs federally is very much in question right now.
Okay. Just how do your Minnesota Youth coordinate with all the other youth programs such as St. Paul Summer Youth and Minnesota Alliance for Boys and Girls Club and Minnesota Summer Youth, Minneapolis Summer Youth, and so forth? Do you coordinate in any special way with the rest of these programs?
I would have to defer to others around the state for other specific kinds of programs, those that are single dimensional or in some geographic area. I can tell you that in our area we have one youth build program that is funded in our area, and again, this is actually operated in our area with an alternative school where we're basically providing vocational programming for them for the youth build in coordination. Their overall regional workforce board is one that would have some oversight and awareness of what's happening in their area. And again, I don't have a lot of those disparate kinds of programs. Much of those are up here in the metro area, but the overall unified state program is the MYP program.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Representative Clark, do you have a question?
I just have a
question. Since you're the captain of the Minnesota Youth Bill Program.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just trying to understand one thing. Is this mostly a summer youth program from what I'm reading here? You're mostly summer employment, is that right?
MYP, the majority of the time is spent in the summer, although we do work with kids throughout the year. I'd say probably 70% of it is spent in the summer. It does complement, again, with the federal program as it currently exists, where that program does not allow you to just work with summer. You need to complement year-round, so it does complement that other program. MYP, though, majority is summer youth.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Paymar.
I really don't have a question of them, but more of the committee since I'm new on it. But I think you were touching on an issue that I've been concerned about. Do we have a big picture of all of the different programs, state, county, city, that are providing, you know, good services to young people who need them? I just, you know that when I was chairing the Public Safety Finance Committee, we had all of the youth intervention programs, for instance, under our account. And I'm not saying that there's duplication, but it would be interesting to get a chart or a list of all of the different programs that are out there. I guess I was talking to the chair. But anyway, I'll talk to the committee. So I think that it might be something for us to look at, because I was just looking at the budget books, and there's other programs that we fund that aren't even in the budget book, and I just think as we move forward on this process, it would be good to get a flow chart, and just get a sense of what they're all doing. There's got to be something out there.
Emily, our committee researcher, I think it'd be a good job for her to find those things out. It's a very good question.
Thank you.
Now, or Anita, either one. Or both.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I was just going to point out that 2 years ago in the Omnibus Economic Development Bill, there was a requirement directed at the Department of Employment and Economic Development to put together a comprehensive list of all the things that the department funds and all the pass-through programs that the legislature funds. And they have come out with an initial report, which is what Representative Gunther has there. I can email it to committee members. It has all the programs and all the pass-throughs by category, an explanation of what they do, some kind of base funding information, because it's not a complete report yet, but I think it's a pretty valuable tool that for committee members, so I can give you all that link.
I'd like to see that. Thank you.
Representative McFarland.
Yes, Ms. Noman, did they do that with education and public safety too?
Mr. Chair and Representative McFarland, no, just employment and economic development. Those other committees will have to do that.
Especially, you know. Any other questions from the members? Representative Clark.
Just one question. I was just reading something here about the Duluth program, and it looks like that's serving college-age students. So maybe in what you're talking about, it would be good to know which ones are college, which ones are high school, which ones are, you know, just...
Minnesota Youth has 21-year-olds in it, so I assume a lot of them are like Reuben.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman,
it's not that they couldn't serve one or the other. It's just
he's
looked
going
like
to college now.
Some might be more targeted to others because the alternative schools generally are high school, but this one looks like it's a college student program. So it's just interesting to know the differences.
We'll get some clarity on those things. Thank you very much for your great testimony. We appreciate it, especially the young men that stood up there and got all the courage in the world and testified.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Any other thing members have to bring before the committee? Hearing none. We're adjourned.